is The Arts. The Art Scene Radio Talk Show.
Welcome to episode 2 of The Arts, The Art Scene Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, Radman.
Hey, this is Spinsane.
Today's date is Wednesday, April 21st, 2004. For those that aren't familiar with our show, this is our second episode. The Arts is a variety talk show which is dedicated to the art, demo, and tracking scene, and all other scenes in between. The first question that we've been receiving from a lot of people is, how often is this show going to be produced? And we're still holding to the semi-monthly release schedule, as long as Spinsane and my schedule permits. Basically, whenever we have time to put out a show, there's always newsworthy events to talk about. It's just a matter of us having the time to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
The basic purpose of this show is to promote and unite the various facets of the scenes while raising awareness amongst them. There's so many different circles within this large community of ours.
Yeah, like for instance, in regard to the first show, I didn't know much about the demo scene, and a lot of the people that I talked to in the ANSI and ASCII scene actually found it very interesting to learn a lot about the demo scene, so I think that did a good job of promoting that. So.
Yeah, I mean, our first show, admittedly, was very demo-centric. In this particular episode, we're going to be covering some other different current events, and we're going to be discussing one of the most ancient forms of computer art still alive today, ASCII art. We're going to be interviewing Blackjack, a well-seasoned veteran of the ASCII scene. We're also going to have Spot on our show. He's going to be a guest on our show. He's one of the admins at DeviantArt, which is the largest art community on the internet today.
Wow.
They're basically, in a nutshell, they're basically the equivalent of Slashdot for the art community. As far as current events right now, I guess probably one of the biggest things is that, not sure how to pronounce it really, but Huet.net and the remainder of all the other Scene.org dependent servers are back online. They've been down, I guess, for about a week or so.
Why were they down?
That I'm not really sure, but from what I understand, the admins were unable to get to the machines for about a week.
I heard Acid.org was down for a while, too.
Yeah, Acid.org was down for about a day due to extreme bandwidth constraints. Basically, it was because we were getting so much traffic as a result of this radio show. I guess we were getting about somewhere in excess of 50 gigs in less than a week, so we had to quickly find a new provider as a result of that. We also are hosting two rather large MPEGs from the Trax 10-year convention that were eating up some bandwidth as well. There's no doubt it was because of the arts show.
Okay, so what did you move it to?
Yeah, our actual, our main site, www.acid.org, is now being hosted by the kind folks at rwjd.com, so...
Oh, really?
Check them out, yeah.
Isn't remorse.org also hosted by them?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Remorse.org is hosted by them. Exodus is the admin of that site, and so
yeah.
he's providing that
for us. I don't know too much about Remorse and Acid, but, you know, that's where my heart lies, so... I find that the most interesting. The show's over.
Yep, that's it. That's a wrap.
All right.
Have you heard about the Where's Bus going on today?
Yeah, I posted that. That was pretty interesting. Is that appropriate talk for the arts show?
I don't know. Somebody's got to get the word out.
I think it'd be pretty entertaining.
But yeah, unnamed sources have reported to us that Ridlove Kalisto has been busted for selling CDs, Where's CDs or game CDs of some sort. And as a result, three Fairlight members have been busted. There's people that are unconfirmed. There's four sites that have been taken down. People are missing and assumed busted. What was it? Two Amnesia members, was it, that have been busted as well?
Yeah.
So different busts taking place in the Netherlands and the U.S., and I'm not really privy to all the details there, but...
Neither am I. I have nothing to do with it.
But if you're in a situation like that, I guess my only advice to you is before you engage in those type of activities, if you're, you know, a legal age, get a retainer for an attorney.
And get a big microwave for all those CDs.
Something.
Yeah.
All right. What else? There's been a lot of new releases that have been coming out. I believe Ito has released a new version of Pablo Draw, right?
Yeah, the new Pablo Draw, which is, bear with me, 2.0.8.48, which I guess is an upgrade from the 4.4 build, has been released last night. I haven't actually had a chance to check it out. What Pablo Draw is, for the people who are listening who don't know, is... an upgrade for the new, our current modern computer times to old school ANSI art programs like Acid Draw or The Draw, or there were a bunch of other ones. Empathy was actually a new one.
Yeah. Basically, from what I understand, Pablo Draws, well, it's a multi-user ANSI editor for Windows.
Yeah.
So it allows different artists from around the world to connect, you know, online and collaborate on an ANSI piece or an ASCII piece together.
Yeah, it's actually completely, I believe, revolutionized the scene for what few people are still drawing. It's allowed us to, instead of having to email each other pieces of work and working on them separately and then emailing them back and forth, which is what we used to call jointing, we can do it online in real time now thanks to this program. Plus, it also addresses the hardware concerns. A lot of people had problems running like AcidDraw, which is a DOS-based program, which I still use. I run that fine on Windows XP. It, of course, runs fine on Windows 95 and 98, but I'm not sure if PabloDraw actually has a Linux version. I should really look into that. I think it might. I know it has a DOS version and a Pablo View.
Right. There's Pablo View, which requires the .NET infrastructure to be installed in order to work. And from what I understand, the latest version of Wine should allow you to emulate. It's not an emulator, actually, but it should allow you to run those utilities just fine under Linux or you know, any flavor of Unix, really.
Okay, well, for those of the listeners who want the link to the newest one, I have it here. It's http://pablo.etoxn.ca/capital-P-A-B-L-O-2.0.8.48.zip. It's kind of a long URL. I think it is on SourceForge as well if you want to search for it, but that's the link Ito, who is the author of it, gave me. So,
now, is that a hidden link? Because when you go to the main page, it, you know, it's counting downloads from December 2003.
Really? Let me test it out.
Well, actually, yeah, it lists that, but then it takes you to 2.07 build 44.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it looks like that's an exclusive.
It must be.
All right, show's over.
Hopefully it works. So I guess it is an exclusive hidden Easter egg from Ito, or he just didn't update the main page, one of the two.
Yeah, I know that he typically, if it's like a private build or something, there's usually distributions that only a select group of people have access to.
I hope I didn't leak it.
Or at least that's the case with Pablo View. I know Pablo View, it supports a wide range of different features, just like Acid View for Windows. It can view, you know, ANSI and XBIN and ASCII and emulate different character sets. It's capable of viewing Commodore 64 text mode graphics, CG, and PETSCII artwork.
Nice.
As well as, you know, all the traditional JPEGs and GIFs and PNGs and stuff
so
like
the
that.
The porn and ASCII viewer, basically.
Basically, yeah.
Not that I use it for that, but yeah.
Speaking of viewers, there's also a new version of UrfanView, which just came out. Are you familiar with UrfanView at all?
Never heard of it.
UrfanView is basically, it's kind of like a freeware version of AC/DC. Everybody knows AC/DC.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, not too many people have heard of UrfanView, but actually, maybe that's a bad analogy. UrfanView, it's capable of handling a wide range of media formats now. It's kind of encroaching upon Winamp territory.
Wow.
Yeah, it's it looks like it's able to handle OGGs. A couple different other audio formats. Their URL is really simple. It's UrfanView.com.
What's the URL?
UrfanView.com for people that want it.
UrfanView?
Yeah. IRFANVIEW.com.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, on another note, there have been a lot, like you said, there's been a lot of releases in the past week or two.
Yeah, what's some of the new stuff that's come out in the text mode scene?
Well, the new Testament pack, which is an ANSI group of Ministar, SkyPager, they run it, and it's a very good ANSI pack, actually. You can get that at scene.downmix.com, which is, I believe, Wick's site, who's a member of the group, as Mechanic. I don't know, Zero Vision did a lot of ANSI art in that and really made it look nice. It was a very solid pack. Basically, they're dominating the ANSI scene right now, and I'm sure they'd love to hear me saying that, so I will go ahead and say that they are dominating it.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad to see that TNT finally pulled through. You know, they're finally put their money where their mouth is, because for the first three packs, I think they were earning the nickname They Need Time rather than The Next or New Testament. And so it's good to see that they've finally, you know, finally done it and put together a really solid pack. I agree. I thought that TNT 4 was an excellent pack, and some of the weaknesses that I saw in a lot of the artists, whether it be poor shading techniques or, you know, really bad outlines and stuff like that, they've really overcome a lot of those problems. You know, I think there was maybe just one bad piece of artwork in that pack.
Yeah. There definitely was one bad piece of artwork in that pack.
But there's always that one. I think they're throwing that in there on purpose. So I think anybody could really appreciate how good TNT 4
really
was.
Yeah, especially if you're not into the ANSI scene. It's something definitely entertaining to look at about how these people... I'm actually still very impressed with ANSI art because I can't do it. I'm sort of trying to learn it. I've never really focused on it. Just the way to blend the colors and shade and with the limited palette that you do have is phenomenal, especially some of the stuff that they end up pulling off with it. So it's pretty impressive stuff, and I think everyone should check it out. Oh, yeah, Skypager should start drawing some mouths as well.
He should start drawing some what?
Mouths.
Are all these people, like, do they all have, like, Matrix faces where their mouths have been...
Yeah, they're all, like, screaming, but they have no mouth, and I'm a scream, et cetera, and gas masks and stuff like that. Yeah, on the ASCII side, the two basically big remaining ASCII groups, even though there are more, Mimic and Remorse both released.
Rather recently, right? When did their packs come out?
Mimic, which is actually Blackjack's group, who's coming on later in the show, a few days ago, I think it's the 16th, I'm not too sure, but they released like every month on the same date.
Right.
And they did it again, and it was a very good pack, actually, one of the better ones in recent memory from them. They had a lot of new artists, including, like, Barium and Lame.
Yeah, Barium's a kick-ass artist.
Yeah, he is, and they've both recently just started, and they're both already very good. And other artists like Cat Dog and just everyone. I mean, they even pulled out old artists like Keytar, who, like, rarely shows up maybe once every 6 months, it seems, to draw. But he had a couple pieces in it. It was just very solid overall. Blackjack had a couple large picks. Actually, he had a couple large picks. Anyway, so it was a good pack. The Remorse pack, I actually put out last night. Yeah, I didn't actually get to see any of the reaction to that because I went to bed right after. But you actually handled putting it up on the web and everything for me, which I appreciate. I was pretty proud of it. I think it had some good art, especially on the old school side. Asphyx.
Oh, Asphyx really came through.
Yeah, he drew some really sweet block ASCII, which is basically uncolored ANSI, which is basically Ware's info art.
So for those that don't know, I mean, there's four major groups of ASCII art, I believe. There's, you know, new school, old school, block, and then what's starting to make an appearance now much more frequently is the notepad style or the inverse block style. I was just wondering if you could maybe describe what those four forms of art are for people that are novices to the ASCII art scene.
Sure. Well, it really started with old school and actually new school, but new school was always, to differentiate, old school is Amiga-based, or actually I'm sure it predates that, but it uses only the underscore, the dash, slash, and the backslash. I mean, it does use some other characters because it is on the Amiga. Some of the other characters have different functions and different looks. You can actually use Amiga fonts to emulate it, what it should look like on your PC. But basically, that's the kind of art you'd see in, like, Linux message of the day logins, stuff like that.
A lot of FTP sites typically use old school art, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty... It's either or. I mean, a lot of sites use block, a lot of sites... Well, not very many use new school. New school being something that developed a little bit later, probably around 1994, I would say, 1993 maybe.
Yeah.
Like K-Spiff and them.
Yeah.
And it's it utilizes all 255 characters in the IBM PC ASCII code. So basically it's, if you have your old DOS manual and you have the alt command menu there, that's all the characters that it uses. And it's also colored sometimes. It can be
Yeah, what did I think Killer Hertz used to call colored new school ANSI. He'd call it ANSCII.
Yeah,
ANSCII.
Yeah. I never picked that up, but that was something that people called it for a little while. But yeah, and then I'm sorry, the other one is the other two that you were talking about are Block, which is basically using the rectangular ANSI characters. I'm not sure what their alt codes are. But there's four of them. They're various degrees of shading. They look kind of like Legos.
Yeah.
Called
yeah.
Blocks. Yeah.
Yeah, like Alt 178. Wasn't there a magazine or something like that called Alt 178?
I don't know. I wish.
Named after like one of the shaded blocks or something, I think.
But, yeah, so what that is just art using those characters and using the shading inherent with those. I mean, you can add other characters in. There's a couple others like... half blocks and little miniature blocks. There's about 8 or 10 of them that are used. And then the inverse notepad, I don't know anything about that. Tell me more? I don't know. That's considered lame.
It's considered lame. It is considered lame by some. It's something that a lot of the newer ASCII groups that are appearing on the scene are starting to do. And there is kind of a debate or contention between the different scenes about the notepad style of ASCII because it doesn't usually adhere to the standard of staying within the confines of 80 columns wide,
yeah.
And it looks like a negative, looks like a film negative, because they're drawing in notepads, so they're going to be using black characters on a white background rather than white characters on a black background, so it doesn't look the same, and if you viewed a notepad ASCII in Acid View or Pablo View, it wouldn't look right, and vice versa, if you were to bring in a traditional IBM PC block ASCII and view it in Notepad, it probably wouldn't look right either, depending on how they made use of the negative space.
Yeah, there's really a very divided scene because of it. There's a giant, mostly, for wares or for their own personal use, scene of people who only know Notepad art.
Right.
And that's why I'm glad one of the reasons that Pablo Draw, Pablo View, Acid View 6.1, and these other window-based applications are being made available recently.
Right, because prior to that, there were things called info viewers.
Yeah.
Right? And that would basically be a notepad viewer that didn't edit.
Yeah. You can't really blame the people. Like, a lot of the more old-school people who draw block and with white text on black background in DOS or whatever, they would have to understand that a lot of these people got their computers in the last few years, and these
right.
programs weren't widely available. People weren't used to them, so.
Right, and there's a need for info files.
Yep. Yeah, and I appreciate some art that's drawn on Notepad, like PEP, for instance.
Yeah, PEPs. Didn't Zoo York at one time do?
Yeah, he did as well. They're
style?
Both in Remorse, by the way, and they've both switched over to drawing in white text on black background.
They've made the switch to the traditional style of block ASCII.
Yeah, and I was actually talking to Peps about it, and he was like, damn, my shit looks good now that I had to put it over to white on black, and he was pretty surprised with it, so.
Yeah, my personal opinion on it is that ASCII does just look better in the, the traditional white on black way, but there are some good notepad type artists out there.
Yeah.
They do exist, that's
yep.
for sure. What else is going on? We have...
Well, just very briefly, the Easter ASCII compo.
Yes.
And which might make a good segue into calling out Blackjack, because what basically happened was the day after Easter, Dead Brain, did you have any hand in organizing it?
The Easter ASCII compo was organized by Dead Brain and was sponsored by Thug Life and Acid Productions, so... The winners of the new school and the old school competitions were awarded, in the case of one, they were awarded a Thug Life mouse pad, and in the case of the other, they were awarded an Acid DVD,
okay,
a Dark Domain DVD.
Okay. For the listeners, what a compo is actually was organized by Dead Brain. Basically, artists get together on FNET in the Pound ASCII Compo channel and have 1 hour to draw art for a word or based upon the theme that is provided for them live, so no one has a chance to draw it ahead of time or anything like that. After an hour, they all submit their pieces to the organizer, and then everyone gets a pack with all the pieces anonymously inside of it, and they vote. And this had a pretty good turnout. It was block
Right, they combined that, right? They combined the block entry with the new school because nobody really turned out for that.
Yeah, there was only one, so it wasn't really any point of voting. But the old school had eight pieces, and Annie won. I liked Annie's piece all right. I thought Barium should have won. I liked his piece best. The winner of the new school was actually pretty nice. It was Blackjack whipped up a pick, a full picture in an hour, which is pretty impressive, I think. So he got the Dark Domain DVD, or did he get the mouse pad?
Right, he won the DVD, and then Annie won the mouse pad, I believe. Another noteworthy or interesting fact about Annie is he was a coder who entered in Breakpoint recently and won in a certain competition. Let me check on that.
Okay. I'm just looking through the pack here, and actually the results of the pack for the listeners, you can get the pack results at www.thuglife.org. It's actually linked from there to a more direct link, if you can't find it, is www.acid.org/FTP/East04AC.zip.
Annie, okay, so here it is. Annie, the winner of the old school competition, he recently placed first in the wild competition at Breakpoint last week. He made a cell phone entry called Pioneers of Modern Economics and High-Tech
really?
Sounds. So he won the wild compo with some sort of a cell phone demo.
Wild compo?
Yep.
What's that?
You know, basically an anything goes kind of competition. And so he entered in with a cell phone demo. He's been an ASCII artist for about 5 years or so, member of Innate ever since its inception.
Yeah, it's a good group.
Yeah.
He's a good artist.
It was pretty funny, actually, when he was on IRC a few minutes before the competition started, he said, I'm going to do something 3D because the people like that. So he was already prepared to do the crowd-pleasing ASCII, and it worked.
It's like Babe Ruth calling his home run. There you go. Draw 3D, everyone.
If you want to win the fast-made IRC compo, draw in 3D.
Gets the women in the wares.
What else? Upcoming events. Well, Nauticon is coming up this weekend, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah, you're going to that, aren't you?
Yeah. Nauticon takes place in Cleveland, Ohio, this Friday through Sunday, April 23rd to 25th. It's a three-track con. It's focused largely on art and technology. And so I mispronounced the name of the convention last show, but Nauticon basically received its name, or it was named that, because the organizers weren't aiming to assemble yet another cliched hacker con in the traditional sense. So I've pretty much gone over it last show, but Nauticon is basically your technology type conference with art and different artistic performances and different speeches that are art oriented that tie into technology.
You're going to be speaking there, right?
I'm actually going to be flying out tomorrow to meet up with Jason Scott. I'll be a co-speaker there on Saturday, and we'll be presenting 100 years of the computer art scene this weekend.
Flying out on the private jet?
Yeah, I'll be taking Acid One.
Chauffeured by helicopter from that.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Do you think 100 years of the computer art scene is going to be recorded and maybe presented on this show at any point?
Yeah, we'll definitely get a couple excerpts. The speech is going to run about an hour, so that would fill up an entire show easily. So what we'll do is we'll cut out a couple excerpts and then tie that into the show.
Okay.
And that's it that I really have for pressing current events right now. As far as past events go, of course, almost or about 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago, Breakpoint 2004 completed. In our last show, we featured an interview with Steeler, who is one of the organizers of Breakpoint, live on the opening day of the party. The ultimate turnout figures apparently were somewhere in the 1,000, I guess.
That's a pretty healthy turnout.
Yeah, according to the press portal and other German newspapers, the ultimate turnout figures were in the neighborhood of 1,000 people.
Wow, so that's actually in the German newspapers?
Yeah, it was covered. According to their website, there could be other papers as well, but it was featured in at least two papers,
nice.
As well as press releases from their sponsor, ATI. Have you had a chance to check out any of the entries or any of the winning entries from?
Yeah, I checked out a few. I didn't really check out all that many. I tried to check out the first place PC demo winner, but it wouldn't run on my computer. It crashed after the loading screen. So.
What kind of video card do you have?
GeForce 2, not top of the line.
Really?
I got it for free at
Oh, that's interesting. Usually it's the Radeon cards that are causing all the problems, I guess, running demos.
I heard a lot of people. I mean, I've always had some problems running demos, but I've always been behind the times on hardware as well, which is why I still draw ASCII art, I suppose. But I did get a run like the second and third place PC demo ones, which were nice.
Oh yeah, the second place was nice. The one assembly invitation demo.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
The first place demo was entitled, appropriately enough, Winter Demo. It was released by Metal Votes. It had some interesting Commodore 64 text mode graphics. So
really?
CG art, yeah. It looks like it's been stirring up a lot of controversy on, you know, different forums and stuff. And the demo was a little juvenile and, I don't know, cocky, I suppose, but it was very well produced. And it had a hilarious German rap soundtrack.
Demo beginning. Jo, wir sind die geilen Metal-Fotzen, die euch ins T-Shirt rotzen. Die aufs Parkett kotzen und die Lamer anmotzen. Die haben uns noch nie erwähnt in ihren Demos. Doch das ist uns scheißegal, wir stehen eh nicht auf Homos. Sie rümpfen sich die Nase, ey, die Jungs sind echt pervers. Na und wir Fotzen stehen halt nicht auf euren Scheiß-Kommerz. Sie labern und sie schimpfen und tun so recht gescheit. Ich weiß ja nicht, was ihr seid, aber wir sind Elite.
Can't get the chorus out of my head, but it's basically, it says, we have computers that can beat your computers.
Oh, okay, cool.
And that's just the chorus that they keep referring back to in the rap song.
We have computers which can beat your computers. We have computers which can beat your computers.
Metal Vaults is primarily a Commodore 64 group that has been around since 1991, so Winter Demo is actually just an exception. All their other releases have been for the Commodore 64.
Okay.
Taking that into consideration, you know, the demo was partially a joke demo, which is why a lot of people have been kind of upset that the first place winner from Breakpoint was the joke demo with, you know, some obscenity in it, but it's humorous and it's well produced. It is done well, other than the fact that it can't run on your video card.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll get it to work. I'll play around with it or go view it at someone's house or something.
Yeah. For those who want to check out more humorous releases from Metal Votes, you can go to metalvotes.openskynet.de/c64/dld.htm. Boot up your C64 emulator and go to town.
How do you spell Metal Votes?
MetalVotze.
All right.
Yeah.
And for people who also want to check out the Breakpoint results, the URL is breakpoint.unter.grund.net, and then just go to After the Party. I would recommend, actually, the PC64K intro.
Oh, yeah.
Saturday Night Scener by Conspiracy.
Yeah, that was a really kick-ass...
Yeah, it was beautiful.
...intro there. I mean, it was a parody of the popular demo by Farbrausch, and was by far the most technically stunning production there at the party place, I think.
I can't believe they can fit all that into 64K. It's just amazing. Like, I don't know.
The soundtrack alone, it didn't sound... How do they fit that soundtrack into 64 kilobytes?
That's exactly what I was thinking. The
yeah.
soundtrack sounds like it was, like, produced in Reason or something. It sounds like it's MP3 quality. It's not like a chip tune or something that they've loaded in there. It could be, but I don't know. It just sounds really good. It looks really good. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I have no idea how they produced that soundtrack. It's excellent.
Yep.
So yeah, overall I'd say that the party was a really huge success. They had a great turnout, 1,000 people or so. They also had the second annual Scene.org Awards there, and we have the results for that as well. They were announced at Breakpoint on April 10th, the day after our show was released. It looks like Moppy took home several awards for their demo 9 or IX. Most original concept, best direction, best demo. You can also see this demo if you have a copy of the Assembly 2003 DVD compilation. This was also featured on their DVD video disc that was included with that, and it placed second place there at last year's Assembly.
I see. Get a copy of that.
Yeah, definitely. It's actually a little bit difficult to get a hold of a copy of that, but you can always pick one up from FuseCon. I believe Paul Bearer has a few left, the guy who also is the primary distributor of the Mind Candy DVD. What else? Aura for Laura by Supadupa. It received the award for Best Effects, and that was actually a PlayStation 2 demo, which was released at Scene Event last year and received second place in their demo compo, which was a combined demo compo, and that party was held in Denmark last year. for those that don't have a PlayStation 2 or the ability to, you know, burn an image and play this demo on a PS2, there's a DivX AVI that can be found on Puet, which is hosted on scene.org.
Do you need a modded PlayStation 2 to view these?
You know, I don't really know. I don't own a PS2 myself, but I would assume that you'd probably need some sort of boot disk or modified hardware in order to get this demo to work.
All right.
I checked out the DivX version of it. It did look really impressive, but the quality of the encoding of that AVI was pretty poor. You know, you could detect a lot of compression artifacts. So
right.
I'd really like to see this real time on a PS2, certainly.
Okay.
Of course, you know, there was no surprise, really, I think, that Candytron took home first place for best intro. And the Public Choice Award went to the popular demo by Farbrush, the disco demo, which was parodied this year with Saturday Night Scener.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, definitely check that one out as well. It was a very cool demo. All of this, as well as commentary from the awards committee, is available at awards.scene.org.
So I guess the Scene Awards are like a Grammy or Emmy.
Yeah.
For the demo scene or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's the first true awards that are being held in a public place. They're the first, like, tangible awards ceremony that I know of that are going on. And, yeah, they're like the equivalent of the Academy Awards.
The Source Awards. Yeah, is there a lot of paparazzi and stuff at them, or are they pretty low-key, you know? Like, how well-produced is it, basically, I'm asking?
I don't know. We're going to have to get one of the Scene.org Awards organizers on here sometime so we can talk to them and see how that went and see what process they went through to select candidates for winners and stuff.
True.
Well, that's all I really have right now for current and recent events. I guess we should go ahead and get Blackjack on the phone.
Yeah, let's go get the rad man of the ASCII scene online.
Okay. Okay, we have Blackjack on the phone.
Hello. Good to hear from you. Hey, Vincent, how you doing? Pretty good, pretty good. Good, good. Sorry for keeping you from work.
about that. No, I just probably won't be going in today.
Yeah, figured.
Yeah, art's, you know, taking over my life.
Yeah, it's getting late. You poor employees.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, right on. How do you, I mean, you've managed to maintain running a Mimic, as far as I know, never been even late. Have you been late?
Maybe We've been late. We weren't late for a number of years. For the first, like, 5 years, we were never late. But then, you know, old age catches up to you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you're releasing on a Friday night or whatnot, and you've got big plans, you know, it's we are late. We're sometimes, you know, like maybe a day late or a couple hours late. It depends. But for the most part, it's in and around the 16th. We try to release every month.
You've never actually missed a month?
No, we've never missed a month.
For how many packs now?
70. Number 70 just came out the other day.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. It was a very good pack. We actually talked about it earlier in the show.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's one of the better packs that's come out in a while as far as New School.
Actually, 70 packs really is impressive. I mean, when was Mimic first founded? How long have they been releasing for?
Well, 70 packs, which means 70 months, so that's almost 6 years. So it was actually started on July 16th, 1998.
That started on your birthday?
Yep. That was a lonely, lonely summer. That was a pretty bad summer for me. I just quit Remorse. And you two co-run now, I suppose.
Yeah, good guys in that group.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, back then, though, Necromancer had just left the group, and so it was kind of uncomfortable. Like, he was always kind of like a mentor to me. I thought he was a great group leader at what he did, and he did just, you know, really awesome at what he did. He was always fair, and he was always there for his members and such, you know, whenever people needed to really just talk to him. And he always liked, you know, being the kind of the mediator between wars of members and such.
So I imagine you picked up a lot of your releasing tactics and your leadership ability from watching and learning.
Definitely during Remorse's earlier years, I suppose. It doesn't seem like early, but I guess Remorse is only in pack like 13 when I joined, and now, yeah, and I went the full year with them, and yeah, definitely my leadership skills have been picked up from Remorse, and also Odelay, though, because Konami and Serialtoon, the other two co-founders of Mimic, Konami was actually running Odelay up until like a month before Mimic number one.
Yeah.
So he led a hand, too, with that.
I guess you did. You had a couple of solid leaders, and in fact, well, I call him Konami, but he's still around, too, isn't he? Still
yeah, well, I talked to him on IRC the other day, but there's like
friends with each other.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely what makes up the group. The group is just, I mean, above and beyond the art. It's the just the communication and having everybody being cool with each other. And we don't have, like, you know, the bureaucracy that some other groups do. We don't have, like, internal conflicts, really. I mean, like, you know, Mimic has, we have our moments where some of our members, you know, may be kind of jerks to people or each other or whatever, just at times, but overall, I'd like to say that we have, you know, one of the better relationships of different ASCII groups that I've been in, that I've seen.
What was it that, you know, you said that you started Mimic, you know, shortly after Necromancer kind of left Remorse.
And vanished.
So was that what motivated you to form your own group, or what was it that inspired you to do that?
Well, at the time, I'd been drawing for Remorse for about a year and a half. And, you know, I really liked the group. There's a lot of great people in that at the time. It's a completely different group now. You know, you can't really compare the two. But back then, there was a lot of people I was pretty close with. And it was weird. Everybody just kind of started vanishing.
Yeah.
Like, Omicron went away, and Houdini became, like, less of in the limelight. And Necromancer just completely vanished. No one heard from him for months on end. And the pack started getting delayed. And, you know, people didn't know what was going on. They started making new people senior staff. And it just went through, like, you know, leader after leader from that point on. But, yeah, I just, at the time, I was kind of inactive, too. I hadn't drawn for, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, which was quite odd for me at the time, because I you know, there was periods where I drew almost every single day, and I just had no motivation with the way the group was going. And I was talking to some people, and we were just like, hey, why don't we just, you know, make a group that releases every single month.
6 years later, how do you find the time and the motivation to keep it going like you have been? Because, honestly, that's an amazing run. 6 years for anything is quite an accomplishment.
Well,
so.
It's just because it's easily integratable to my life. Like, I can, when my career actually took off from ASCII, not from ASCII directly, but because of my relationship with the different people in the ASCII scene, I was taught, like, Unix, literally, by people in Remorse and such, and I was able to just teach myself, and, you know, I ended up becoming the CTO of a company because of that. And so I can slot Mimic in alongside my other, like, administrative responsibilities and such, and it's pretty easy. Like, it doesn't really take up that much time.
Right.
I mean, the group pretty much runs itself at this point. We have, lately it was getting kind of tough, but we recently I made two more senior staffs in the group. We got Jashin and H7.
Jashin and H7 are two very good ASCII artists.
Yes. Oh, yeah, they're veterans, too. I mean, well, H7 more so than Jashin, but, well, yeah, even now, Jashin has been around for a long time. You know, it's just weird, my perspective of it all. If they haven't been drawing longer than me, they're kind of still new in my eyes.
Understand how you feel.
And I haven't even been drawing that long, you know, so.
Yeah, but, I mean, Jashin and H7, I guess that gives you a strong new school and old school senior staff. Who did they replace, or did they replace anyone?
H7 replaced El Nino. El Nino was a long-time senior staff, the longest that we've had in Mimic, for years and years, but he just, you know, people move on. That's understandable. He's a great guy, but we just needed someone that was, like, actually had a presence that could support other old-school artists. And so H7, you know, is doing a great job. In terms of Jashin, he didn't replace anybody. Adernam is still actually a new school coordinator alongside of him, but for a while, Adernam had, like, a lot of school stuff and a lot of personal stuff, and so he kind of took a step back. But yeah, the extra help has just really been great for us.
What do you think about some of the new groups that are forming as far as the ANSI side of the scene and Remorse's attempts to integrate ANSI into the pack? You don't like block art, do you? Or?
Yeah, I've kind of come around. I love ANSI. I think ANSI is great. I haven't really tried drawing it, but I love it. I love looking at it, and I think the packs, you know, produce some, like, fabulous art out there right now. Like, there's some really good groups. They're really new, too. And I dig them, and I think they're kind of, they got the right idea, but a lot of the people that are running these groups are pretty inexperienced with the whole leadership thing. I might not agree personally with some of the things that people are doing or saying, but I don't know. As long as they can keep producing and kind of keep the amount of crap and the amount of ego and just all that stuff just to a minimum. If they can keep that down to a minimum, everybody should be able to kind of bring the ANSI scene back.
Yeah. What do you think about it? It seems like the ANSI scene in general hasn't really known. I've noticed some people say that
Yeah, I do think that's true. I think just the anti scene has more of kind of an elitist attitude. It's been around longer. The ASCII scene has only really broken into it on its own in, like, you know, 1994. And, you know, the anti scene was around for years and years before that. And people, like, say that, you know, arguably the anti scene was at its prime in 1994. And so if that's when the ASCII scene started, you know.
Maybe
yeah.
That's why people started drawing ASCII, because they thought a lot of the ANSI was already done, you know? Not
yeah, a lot of, like, Maestro and Lord Jazz really boosted New School ASCII standards.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on your comment that the prime of the ANSI scene was around 94. You know, you could, arguably, between 94 and 96, I think, when it was at its height.
I think that's when the whole scene kind of was around its height, too. Like, it seemed like it kind of started to die off around 97.
But, with CBS, though, that's why.
Yeah, that's true. The internet really started to make a big push then.
People may not already know this, but you also run one of the largest ASCII archives on the internet, period, right? You run the Christ ASCII Archive.
Yeah, that started back when Mimic started, because Remorse was vanishing.
Right.
Necromancer had put together kind of like a ragtag archive.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened for a while was that ftp.remorse.org actually went down. But in the meantime, I had backed everything up, and I was kind of maintaining like a mirror of it or whatever. And it just eventually evolved into its own thing because the Remorse archive went down. And so I kept it going, and it just kept going.
Do you recall when the Remorse.org ASCII archive was created?
Do I know when? It was created when I see, the thing is, it was basically from a Necromancer's personal archive.
Okay.
To my knowledge, I think that was all just him and Houdini. Like, they had their own archive, and they just, I think it was actually put online in like 90. I think it was after I joined Remorse, so I'm going to say early 97.
Really?
I think is when Remorse came back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, definitely, when Remorse merged with Trank and Acid ASCII, I think that's when they put it up around that time. They got everything together with the domain, and yeah, it went up then.
That's kind of how the ArtPax archive started in 96. It was, you know, it was a collection of ArtPax that I had and that Shiv and Bastard had, and we also just got a couple large art BBS SysOps together, and we just kind of put everything in one single place, and next thing you knew, we had the ArtPax directory on CDROM.com.
I miss ArtPax. I miss the ArtPax archive. I always used to upload my packs and packs to ftp.cdrom.com when it was there, and I think just having like a definitive source like that is what's missing in the scene. Because to my knowledge now, I don't think, do we have like a single archive?
Not really. Everything's really dispersed and separated. You have to go to, you know, a bunch of different news sites if you wanted to. There is really no
definitive source.
Yeah, there's really no definitive central location where you can go get ANSI or ASCII art these days, especially ANSI art. But
there's Idle Dreams.
Yeah, I mean, there's Idle Dreams,
they're really outdated though.
Yeah.
In terms of new packs.
He hasn't incorporated the Dark Domain DVD yet, and as far as I know, there's no way to upload to Idle Dreams.
Yeah.
And that was the beauty of CDROM.com, is that we had an incoming directory.
Yeah. That's what I've kept going with ftp.mimic.ca, the Christ ASCII archives. It has, you know, a working FTP upload, and there's, you know, complete instructions on all that. But the problem is, because of the rifts in the ASCII scene, they're not as big as the ANSI scene, but we don't have people, like, actively uploading their group's packs to an archive, which seems pretty ridiculous to me. I mean, you know, if you have an archive, why not?
I think the other problem, too, is that a lot of groups don't realize that they might not be there tomorrow, and their website might not be there tomorrow, so they just think, well, I'll throw it up on my site, or I'll throw it up on this site. They're not basically making use of the tools that are available to them. And so maybe as a result of this show going out, you know, they'll check out your site. What's the URL for people that run an ASCII group that may want to upload their packs to your site?
Well, if you go to ftp.mimic.ca, you can, it has the standard old FTP directories there, but it's actually in /pub/incoming. And, once you log into the site, like, it gives you instructions on where to upload, and just, like, it actually tells you, like, how long the archives have been around, but yeah, it's just the pub incoming directory, and you can upload your packs there, and it takes me a while these days to actually move the packs over, and the only reason that is because basically nobody uses the FTP upload. Yeah, so it's gone to the point where I don't even I used to check it every other day or whatever, but now I check it maybe once a week because, you know, no, like, people don't upload their packs. I don't think an impure pack has basically ever been uploaded to that site.
That's funny. I remember in the heyday of the Art Packs archive, we had the opposite problem. Everybody was trying to upload to it. We'd be constantly receiving an influx of wares or virus-infected files. I mean, we actually had a batch of scripts that would go through and process all the incoming zip files, and it would scan for, you know, infected, you know, any sort of virus, any sort of anything that would indicate that it was a wares release. It would, you know, automatically delete that zip, and then it would take the DIS and integrate that into the archives database and then move it into the proper directory. It was completely automated back when everything was working.
That's great. I remember that. That was really awesome, and I think we need that now. I mean, what me, myself, Jeshin, and Adernim primarily are trying to do is we're trying to start up ASCIIart.net, and what that'll do is it'll be kind of like a news source, and it'll tie in the Christ archives with like a news site. And if we hook that up with like an RSS stream, we can. I don't know. What we want to do is we want to have it so that members register like and have their groups register like Akron.
OJuice also does something similar to that.
Who, sorry?
OJuice.net.
Isn't that that's just for Ansi though, right?
It's pretty general, but it's demo scene oriented, but it's pretty generalized.
There's also scene.downmix.com as well, which is actually has been doing a pretty good job of getting all the releases from the ANSI, ASCII, like, groups that I've never actually heard of, like Noir. I mean, some...
That's the second Noir, eh? Wasn't there an earlier Noir?
Number 8 they're up to. It's actually a really good...
There was another Noir, like an ANSI.
Oh, yeah, I think there was. There was one maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah. There's an older one.
And then there's, I mean, like, Roster, another group I've never heard of. They seem to do a pretty good job, but I agree that it needs to be more... Everyone needs to know more about it.
Wick has a good thing going there with the downmix site, but the thing that I see as a problem with it is none of it, like, well, it is, but none of it is, like, truly automated to the point where, you know, you pretty much don't have to, Akron is like that. You know, you don't have to touch the site. It's completely runs itself. I don't even think Danger Mouse has seen his website in years.
He hasn't. It's completely automated, like you said.
Yeah, I that's great. That's what we need, but... what we also need is we do need like new features on Akron, and we need I don't even know the Mimic password anymore. I lost it years ago, and to my knowledge, there's no like password reset. So, you know, I can't make posts into the group, and I've tried emailing him, but you know, no response.
Yeah, I think I actually usually am the guy who posts your pack announcements on Akron.
Yeah, I don't know. As much as I say, you know, what we need is we need automation. What we need is a centralized pack and an archive and such. I am not the most active person with that. I mean, you know, as much as I do run Mimic and such, it's that kind of stuff is just, over the years, it gets more tiresome.
Uh-huh.
And you kind of forget about it.
Yeah. Well, at least some people are doing it. We're all together as a scene, still doing stuff. And the art show here will hopefully inform more people about different disparate sites. Get us together.
You know, for years people have been saying how, you know, like there's phases in the scene, how there's comebacks and how there's, you know, different revivals and such. And I think for the first time basically ever since I started Mimic, I see like more of an actual revival now than I ever have.
Yeah, I think that people are getting older.
They're graduating school, that's what they're doing. And they're finally, you know, coming back. I mean, you don't have to base your life around ANSI or ASCII, but if it's a hobby, you know, you can give up a few hours or whatever to, you know, produce art and to do what you know, used to love.
Yep. We were discussing this also earlier. You were the first place winner of the New School Fast Made ASCII competition, the Easter ASCII compo on IRC recently, the day after Easter. Basically, what was your take on that compo?
I thought the compo was great. I thought it was a success. I thought you guys did a pretty good job of... Oh, I know, you know, Radman, you weren't really primarily involved with it. You're more of just kind of like a helper. In terms of just organization, it was pretty well done. I didn't actually know that it was taking place until pretty much like an hour before.
Uh-huh.
And I was completely oblivious. And the thing, that's a problem. I think they need to get the word out. If you're going to have an ASCII compo, why not, you know, inform it like an op in the ASCII channel and get them to make it the topic or, you know, get them to spread the word. Like, I literally didn't hear about it, and I'm pretty active in the ASCII scene, so what does that say? I think they should have gotten the word out more. They should have, like, hardcore advertised it to the point of harassment, even.
Right.
And then, you know, and that would have boosted up the attendance of artists. But in terms of just how they did the voting and the judging and how they, I don't know, it was okay. Like, it was pretty good. They could have obviously done it better, but for something that happened so, you know.
It was rather spur of the moment, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like a compo, you know, it's rough. You get all these people messaging you, sending you art, and trying to vote. It's, you know, a tactic. So you need to delegate tasks properly to different people. You need different people running it. You can't do it all yourself. And I think if those guys did it next time, they'd do, like, a much better job, and they'd make it even better, and they could have, like, a really super-duper successful compo on their hands.
So tell us more about your piece. The rumor has it that you used the rich uncle Pennybags from the ever-popular Monopoly board game as your reference point for your award-winning new school piece.
Yeah, I heard about that rumor, too, and I'm pretty sure that rumor is just basically an elaborate lie that you made up because you thought it was funny. But, no, I've been reading a lot of comics lately. Because the Hellboys movie's coming out, I've been looking back at some old Hellboy comics and such, and that's basically what I based it on. I based it on the art in Hellboy, like the style. It's very minimalist. It's very heavy on the contrast, and I just kind of went with that and made, you know, this character for the compo. And it was rushed for the compo. The compo was only an hour, which was kind of rushed for New School ASCII.
Right. Well, that's how it should be if you're doing an IRC compo. Right?
Well,
what do you think
is
the ideal time for an IRC competition?
Well, the only reason that I was able to finish the pick was because I've been drawing picks for, you know, God knows how many years. But, I mean, just somebody who's new to the art scene is not going to be able to complete a piece in that short period of time. Because we do have a lot of, like, the most active people are the newer people.
Right.
And I think that you at least give an hour and a half for New School. Because, like, there were some good fonts there, too. I was quite surprised at the quality of art that was submitted for the compo. There were some really good pieces there. And, I think a little bit more time and to get the word out would have made this compo, like, you know, you would have had more art for your for arts.
Definitely. Is there any upcoming news or anything we should be watching out for from Mimic, like the mouse pads or anything? Are you still selling those?
The Crabtastic ones?
Oh, yeah. Okay, it's traditional ASCII. Yeah, we're going to try to get some merch out. Not merch in terms of making money off this stuff, but to show the support. People always like that stuff. I mean, for a while, we were associated with DeviantArt, and we did some posters with them. And I'm sure if we pushed it again with ARC, we could kind of get that going, but it didn't go as well as I thought it would because, like, both parties, I guess, lost kind of motivation. But in terms of stuff that's coming out in very soon, we got, I'm going to try to get the mouse pads. Hopefully we'll get some shirts printed for some of the members and such. I've been sending out, like, mouse pads to people who I thought did well in packs. Like, for a couple packs, whoever I thought contributed the most and, you know, did a really great job, I sent them mouse pads. So we did that for a little while, but I'll try to get those out there. We got pack number 73 coming up, which is actually the six-year birthday pack.
Okay.
So you got 6 times 12 plus the loop around for the year. You got the 73rd pack, and that'll be pretty big. The birthday packs are always pretty cool. Just people really come out and they really show their support. You know, like 6 years is a pretty big milestone. And so that's going to be exciting. We got ASCIIArt.net coming up, which hopefully I want to get, like, every person from the ASCII scene kind of into this. And I want people to help me with this because I know that, you know, I won't be able to shoulder the entire thing. I got too much stuff going on. So it definitely, if anybody wants to help program with that, if they want to help do HTML, if they want to help basically with anything, I'm open to any suggestions with ASCIIArt.net, including you guys on the phone right now.
Oh, where can people get a hold of you?
IRC, the pound number ASCII channel, the Mimic channel.
On FNet?
On FNet. And, I'm pretty easy to get a hold of, I think, compared to some people. But, just if anybody offers help, I'm, you know, willing to look into anything.
Okay, and the main site is?
www.mimic.ca is the Mimic website.
Cool. All right. Well, hey, Blackjack, thanks a lot for being a part of the second episode of The Arts.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. It's been great.
All right.
Take care, man. Switch over to my spot notes. Okay, here we go. We have Spot on the phone. He is the Director of Prints and Payment Solutions at DeviantArt.
How you doing?
So basically, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You started in the art scene, like, what, 1999 or prior to that?
Oh, no. It was way before that, as more of a drifter. I'd say 95, 96.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't do much because not really that much of an artist. It wasn't until I started venturing pretty heavily into the web development side of things that I started becoming of any use to any established groups at the time. So, and that wasn't, I believe, the first really established group I was in was Avenge.
That was primarily an Ansi group, right?
Yeah, it was. And I handled most of their web projects, which they were doing some cooperative things with kind of ICE, mainly some members of ICE, including Eric Jordan and some other things. And the founder of Avenge Creator, he eventually became a business partner of mine on a web development agency. And then from there, I went from Avenge to, man, that's history. From Avenge to CIA, I believe. And then from
the creators of Intense Art.
Correct, yes.
And you ran Seer?
Yes. I founded and ran Seer with my cousin and best friend, Ian.
Okay, cool. Is that Francis Seven, or who's that?
No. F7 was actually, he was the president for a while, but he wasn't really, he was kind of a founder. I mean, in that way, there was quite a few founding members, you know, that it would be F7 and Mongi, and who was one of the few people we let get away with dueling, and Kitty Muzzle and Tech 13 came on shortly after that, and then as far as that would mainly be the founding group, and then there were a few other people that were very useful in propagating the name of Seer to other people and other genres and things, and those would be people like Precursor and Misery in Motion, who's now Dead Dreamer, and a bunch of people. It was we had a really good group back then.
Yeah, Seer took off pretty well. They were founded, what, sometime in 99?
Yeah, it was the very end of 99. I think our first pack, which, man, it sucked, was in December.
Okay. And then they kept releasing, what, monthly or so?
Yeah, it was monthly. Like I said, the first pack was way, way below expectations. But I think that's kind of expected, especially since nobody involved really had any experience running an organization like that. But then the second pack actually ended up a lot better, and the current review site, which I believe is Rumble, we actually came out number one that month.
Seer was mostly high-resolution art, wasn't it?
Correct, yeah. We actually had quite a few projects on the plate to launch for music and literature and things of that nature, but I'm the type that I don't really like to do things until they're shiny and pretty, and they never got to that place, because it's kind of, especially back then, the scene was a little bit younger, and it was hard to find responsible individuals to lead divisions like that.
Yeah, right. that was a hard time to run groups back then. I ran reports back then. It was pretty thin.
It's funny how you grow in things, because I just looked at all the Seer packs again like 2 weeks ago for the first time in probably a year, and I was looking at them going, man, you know, a lot of this stuff was not that great, you know, compared to a lot of the stuff I've seen on DeviantArt and stuff. So, but I mean, you know, the thing is, like, Spiden thing was implying, I assume, that Rumple was kind of a joke. So, and their interviewers had a lot of growing to do.
How did you come to join up with DeviantArt and become an admin there?
Well, that's kind of a long story, but trying to shorten it. When I started Seer with Ian, we were both working for a credit card processor, and I was vice president of information technology. And halfway through Seer's lifespan, I got recruited to another payments processing company as chief technology officer. While I was there, what happened was trying to proliferate Seer's name among other genres, because, you know, at that time, the underground art scene was more or less, it stayed pretty captive inside itself, and right. We were interested in trying to branch out and find our artists from other genres of art, and we started looking into the demo scene and things of that nature, which that's why probably in some of the later packs you'll see some pretty familiar art from artists from demo groups and things of that nature. In that search, we came in contact with DeviantArt, which got me in contact with Jark. Jark had known about the group for a while, and he found it very interesting, and he was interested in doing a partnership of types. And at the time, he just wanted me on staff, mainly just to be on staff I think it was a name thing at the time. And I left, I think, about 2 months afterwards, mainly because there was really no reason. I wasn't doing anything because, you know, I didn't have time and there wasn't anything that I really fit with at the time. And then later on, because of the industry I was in, JARC needed to locate a credit card processor and somebody who could write them a merchant account. And so he came to me and then ended up putting me in contact with Spide, or Angelo, and that's where I met Angelo at first. And we ended up providing those services to them for a while, up until just recently. Then 2 years ago, in October, I left Virtual Money where I was and started doing contract work, and mainly doing contract work enough to support myself working for DeviantArt. And so, because it's a great, absolutely wonderful company to work for.
Excellent.
Even if you're doing it for free.
Yeah, and I mean, there are a lot of admins that are volunteering their own personal time for free, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, of course, there are a few individuals in the company that really we have to give them something so that they can live, and because we need their time so bad. Like, for instance, our CTO, Chris Bolt, he would be a prime example of that. I mean, the site on the technical end would fall to its knees within a day or two if he wasn't around. So, which we're trying to get some of that load off of him right now. We've added more developers lately, things of that nature. But he does the job of about 15 people right now. So, yeah, there are a few critical individuals that must be working on things full time. But I mean, for the most part, a lot of what goes on at DeviantArt, especially as far as community administration, is done just out of the love and generosity of the admins that do it. You know, so that's why I sometimes get annoyed at people who gripe about, you know, at administrative decisions. Like, you know, these people, they're not getting much, you know. They're doing this out of their own free will and giving their time to you.
It's a thankless job, right?
Exactly, yeah.
There's been a lot of success stories, right, that have come out of DeviantArt as a result of putting their art up there. Is that true?
Yeah. Actually, we have, I couldn't name any of them off the top of my head, but that doesn't mean anything. I'm really fried lately. My brain's not working. But we have... Our traffic alone will tell you that we have a lot of exposure that we provide for artists to people across the board in all types of industry, from the entertainment to gaming, which would be part of entertainment, but, you know, the movie industry, traditional art. You know, we're always trying to create relationships with art houses and other art-related organizations, things of that nature. There's been quite a bit of good success stories of people who have not only not found their talent yet or crafted it well yet and have come to DeviantArt and become amazing artists, but those who were like that and were already amazing and came to DeviantArt and actually found a commercial outlet for them so that they could, you know, quit their day job and work for somebody doing what they love, which, you know, is what we all want to do.
Exactly. Is there one person who's actually... From what I understand, there's somebody who's actually selling their artwork somewhere in the hundreds of thousands of dollars per piece?
Yes, there is.
Is that something public that I should be discussing on the show, or is that something that we can talk about?
No, it's not.
Okay. Well, then we'll just leave it at that.
Okay. But that particular artist is a very established artist.
Okay.
And they are they have some amazing work.
I guess what I'm getting at is that revenue a direct result of him coming and becoming a part of the DeviantArt community, or is that something that he was already doing beforehand and now he's just extending that through DeviantArt?
Well, I mean, like I said, that person was already an established artist, so, I mean, he was already selling his artwork before. Now, I mean, who am I to say if he's gotten, I mean, he's obviously gotten a lot more exposure on a worldwide scene from DeviantArt, because...
Right.
You know, he's very well known, and I mean, for very obvious reasons. I mean, we're getting, I believe our current numbers are, I think we're getting, last number I heard, which is a few days ago, was 250 million hits a month. And so, I mean, we're getting like 20,000 new art submissions a day.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's, and I think we're about to top 800,000 artists.
What sort of traffic are you guys generating every day, as far as gigabytes a day?
Gigabytes a day? I don't know as in that. I know that we're pushing a cap on our primary link, which is 100 megabit. We're pushing a cap on that as an average. So I know that usually we're pushing around 95 megabit a second on average.
Wow.
So, I mean, but like our numbers, I actually got them up in front of me now. We're getting about 200,000 unique visitors a day. and we get about 200,000 comments a day, and like I said, 20,000 new art submissions, and we're right over 5 million works of art at this point. And I don't have the number on here for new subscribers, but from what I understand, it's like, I could be off, I think it's like 15,000 new members a month.
Pretty impressive.
And so, yeah, impressive, but try keeping up with it on a network scalability.
I guess for the people that are into the technical statistics and such, how many servers are supporting the DeviantArt websites? I'd imagine there'd be a pretty large bed of servers to manage all of that.
I really can't get too specific on that, mm-hmm. but yeah, it's pretty, like I said, I've worked at two credit card processors and other companies, and so I've seen some pretty impressive server farms, and I've actually been in person to our farm, and it's impressive. It's very impressive. Of course, because art is by nature hard to make profit off of, before it was almost a ragtag, you know, combination of hardware, you know, wherever we could get it and for, you know, the cheapest price. And now it's becoming, we've gotten better at finding better deals. eBay is very good. And so things are starting to shape out better, even from a cosmetic point of view of the farm. But it's really, it astounds me what Chris and a few of the other people involved have been able to accomplish and support a site of this size on the hardware and budget that they've been given. So it is, I mean, even from an outside point of view, you know, it's impressive.
How familiar are you with the history of DeviantArt? How did it get its starting?
Angelo, who would be Spied, founded a company called Dimension Music, and it was a good place to put it in your mind, is it was almost on the same level as MP3.com, but not quite as big. But if you removed MP3.com out of the picture, Dimension Music would be the next big guy. And Angelo was the CEO of Dimension Music, and it got bought up by a very large investor, a well-known name. And while he was there, Jark was working for him as a programmer. And he came, from my understanding, is there was a piece of Dimension Music that was a skinning section, that they were producing skins and hosting skins for stuff like Winamp and things of that nature. And this was back right after Winamp was really getting popular.
Right.
And Jark came to Angelo and said, you know, we've had requests for the ability to host other types of art. And from what I understand, Jark actually came up with the name as well. And, you know, at the time, Angelo was dealing with a massive amount of things, and obviously, you know, another site called DeviantArt was just little bitty things on his plate. And he said, okay, you know, that sounds good. Go do it. And Jark needed someone, because at the time he wasn't really in touch with a lot of artists, so he needed someone to go out and talk to artists and get them to come to the site. So they hired Mateo, which was Matt Stevens. If anyone's ever seen the thing that Tech TV did on DeviantArt, that was Mateo.
Okay.
And Jark more or less wrote the code for the first version of DeviantArt, which if you see the code now is unfathomable. But he wrote the first version of DeviantArt himself while he had the flu over the weekend.
That's great.
Yeah, and so, and then it just started from that, and then eventually DeviantArt needed to break away from Dimension Music. It was becoming big enough that Angelo took the leap of faith and he went with it and became the CEO. It was mainly Jark's idea from the beginning. Angelo approved it and funded it from the beginning.
Right. So he's more of the financer behind the whole DeviantArt project.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it wasn't his money, so obviously, you know, he approved the use of the funds, you know. You know, I have to say, Angelo and Jark both, people cannot comprehend how much they have put into this company.
Yeah.
And gotten relatively nothing back. I mean, literally. As far as a community that really, you know, gets a lot out of that site, I mean, they need to push as much love to those two people as possible.
Yeah. I'm actually looking at the site right now, and it's just amazing the amount of different things that are on there. Cell phone art, handheld art, flash. It's quite comprehensive. I imagine it's quite an undertaking for them, so...
Oh, yeah, and managing not only this amount of art, but this amount of people is seriously, I mean, I considered myself to accomplish quite a few things in my life, but this is really, I mean, just, I do mostly business development and things of that nature, so I don't have to deal with managing the community, but watching these people do this is just, it's almost inspirational, because, I mean, when a community, when you get the body of people that are this large, it becomes almost its own living organism. And you can't really make it do anything.
Yeah.
You just kind of have to shepherd it and hope it goes the direction that you need it to go. And so
Jeez. I wonder, how big is the company, like, actually, if you can talk about it, like, how many employees actually work on keeping this all together? Because it is, I don't even know where to start looking.
Well, I can't really talk about employees, but I could probably say about volunteers. We have about 40 volunteers.
So there's 40 volunteers for what's approaching a million user community?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have their hands full.
So, what can you say, really?
Yeah, so everybody definitely take that to heart, and everybody should probably give these admins much love for taking out time of their own to keep this community together and keep it going.
Yeah, yeah, no, I completely agree. Like, the policy violation admins, which are more or less the cops, man, that is the worst job you would ever want.
Yeah, they have to scan all the forums, I imagine. And all.
Oh, they scan the forums. They're the ones that ban people. They're the ones that hand out policy violations. And they are treated like trash.
Yeah, that's great.
What sort of things are they monitoring for, like, other than copyright infringement, I'm sure? But
well, there's copyright infringement. We don't allow any type of pornography.
Right.
I mean, we do allow nudity.
Yeah.
But, you know, pornography would be an intent to arouse.
Right.
So there's no pornography. Copyright violations of all kinds, not just commercial violations, but of other artists, things of that nature. We don't allow, obviously, any type of harassment or bigotry. There's no racism, nothing. And so, I mean, we fully and wholeheartedly support free speech, but we don't allow someone to put someone down for their religion or their sexual orientation or anything like that. And so the PBAs, it's their job to scan the forums and people's user pages and everything. Now, they have been kind of alleviated from scanning the art because there is a whole department of gallery directors. And because we try to view each category as its own, like, art gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's gallery directors, depending on the size, there may be one or two or three. I think one of them has four. I could be off on that. And their job is to go through and scan new images that are coming in, or, you know, if it's poetry, new literature that's coming in, and check it for anything that would violate our policies.
I was actually wondering more about that process because I was just thinking, how many submissions did you say you had again?
We're getting about 20,000 a day.
So what kind of turnaround must there be on the actual posting of the submissions? If, I imagine that takes quite a while to scan through.
Well, yeah, we don't actually hold the submission, like, out of public eye. It still gets submitted, so to the end user, there's never any
lag or...
Yeah, there's no lag or anything like that, but a gallery director will go through new images, you know. The thing is, it's one of those things that becomes almost second nature, you know what to look for.
Right.
And so, and I mean, like, on rips of other artists, there's really no way to catch those unless you actually are a follower of that artist and have seen a lot of their work and you just notice it.
Right.
Usually copyright violations of that kind are actually initiated by the author, and then PBA will handle them usually. But gallery directors, they'll go through all the images. And the thing is that, I mean, they'll go through, I mean, I've heard people talk about in the staff channel on IRC that they went through, you know, 500 images in the last hour and a half.
Wow.
You know, so it's just, it becomes second nature. You're just running through and running through and running through. And a lot of the stuff you can check just by looking at the thumbnail.
Yeah. And those people are the volunteer...
Yeah, actually they are.
Okay.
So.
Very interesting.
We're very lucky to have them.
I was actually wondering, you mentioned Tech TV, which I don't have the opportunity to do myself, but I know a lot of people who do. What other kind of media exposure has DeviantArt had?
We've had a lot of interest, but to be perfectly honest, the growth is so, I mean, to kind of explain the growth, we went from, I believe we were, I don't know how long ago this was, but anyways, we were at like 5 million page views a day, and we went from that, me and Angelo had to go on a business trip, and we came back 3 days later, and we were at 6.5 million page views a day.
Wow.
What's literally happening, and this is no exaggeration, is we will spend money that we really don't have on massive hardware, and we'll put the hardware in, and we'll think, okay, that'll hold us for 2 months. And in 2 days, it's reached its limit.
That's
and
amazing.
So the thing is that media exposure, we don't really at this point in time want an article to come out in Wired or Time because we don't need any help getting more traffic because we're having a hard enough time keeping up with it as it is.
Yeah, I imagine. Do you get any donations of hardware?
Every once in a while, yeah. I mean, there's some friends that Angelo has at different companies because he's been in the online music-based industry for a long time. You know, and there's been some people are like, you know, we're throwing out this hardware. If you want it, we'll send it over to you. And, you know, of course, he's like, oh, great, yeah. But for the most part, we try to get stuff on eBay and things of that nature, auctions, hardware that's used but is still in good shape. Somebody got rid of it because they just needed something more powerful or something like that.
What are some of the things that are on DeviantArt's plate going forward?
We have a lot of really good projects that I can't talk about, unfortunately. But some things that we're in the middle of right now is we're doing a complete, which we haven't really talked about this at all, but DeviantArt has a print program where artists can get a print account and they can upload source images as big as they would like, and then they can sell those, and we actually print them as a hard copy on high-quality Fujifilm paper with Fuji ink, and I mean, I was blown away the first time I saw one. And we're completely, from the ground up, redesigning and rewriting that entire experience from the artist's point of view, from the consumer's point of view, and then from the normal artist's point of view who's not a print artist, which is actually a very large undertaking, not to mention some credit card processing changes that we're in the middle of doing as well. That's one of the things. There's another big change which we believe will be, I can't really go into details there because I'll get killed, but it should be something that should be coming up probably within the next 3 months, and we honestly think that it will change the entire face of the community. Wow. In the way of, right now, the community is just a big blob, mm-hmm. and they're interacting with each other, and this will allow for some type of user-selected segregation, not of a derogatory nature. It'll allow actual clicks to form if they need to, so people of the same interest can find each other better. So
pretty interesting.
Yeah. And then there's some really larger projects that are on the table for long term, but those you will hear about when we announce them.
Right. Otherwise, our entire audience would need to sign some sort of non-disclosure agreement.
Exactly, yes.
Along the lines of the print thing, I imagine that's sort of along the lines of hype up any competitors, but kind of like a Cafe Press type deal where I guess you probably, well, you give a certain commission to the artist and you can get some profit for DeviantArt from that.
Actually, if Angelo heard you compare us to Cafe Press, he would give you a dirty look and walk away. But, no, I'm just joking. Cafe Press, and I don't say this because I'm the director of prints or anything of like that, I had this opinion way before I ever was there. I'm not real impressed with Cafe Press's quality on products at all. And Cafe Press doesn't really do large format prints either. So, like, at this point, we're only doing prints. So we can do everything from a 4x5 to a 20x30, and we're about to offer soft sizes larger than that. And literally, when I say they're high-quality prints, you can't get a better print than this anywhere. I mean, they are incredibly high-quality prints. The paper's expensive. The ink's expensive. Everything. But, yes, it is the way the system works is there is a base cost that even we have to pay.
Right.
And then the artists can set their own price above that, and it's split down the middle, and they get half, and we get half.
Sounds like it's a very excellent source for people who are into some more non-traditional art forms to get something for themselves.
Oh, yeah. Certainly it's wonderful. Fun. I think right now we have, and I haven't looked at the latest numbers, I think we have about 12,000 prints online.
Nice.
And after this big change we're about to do, we're going to have a lot more than that online because it's going to enable a lot more people to make their work available as a print. And then we're bringing on new products, I believe the first phase is t-shirts and mouse pads and mugs, and we have the opportunity to bring on a lot more than that, but we're very particular about the quality of the product. We don't want to make available anything that's corny or clanky of any kind, so we shop the base products real well to find a high quality distributor.
Well, that sounds great. For our listeners, they should check that out. That's at DeviantArt.com.
Yes.
Bradman, you got any more questions?
No, I think that's it.
Thank you, guys, for having me on. I really like what you're doing here.
All right. Well, hey, Spot, thanks very much for being a part of the Arts Radio Show. We appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to be a part of this show.
Of course.
Take care, dude.
Thank later. You.
Well, that went very well.
Yeah, running out of time?
Well, I think I'm running out of hard disk space.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You know, next time I'll have to record on another drive. What have you been doing recently since our last show?
Just put out the remorse pack. Been working. That's about it.
I heard that your cat is becoming some sort of a literary expert.
Yeah, my girlfriend reads The House of Seven Gables to him or something. That was last night, but that's for private eyes only. So.
How well is he retaining that information?
I don't know. I guess we'll have to give him some kind of CAT scan.
Oh, man. We didn't even stage that. That's just, that's pure spin-sane humor right there.
Yeah, I'm a fucking funny guy. Yeah, so that's about it, man. Just been waiting for the show, actually. Like, I'm really glad we got to do it. And can't wait for the next one. I guess it's going to be after Nauticon.
Yeah, sometime after Nauticon, we'll have to do a little cap of that whole thing. Myself, I've basically tried to wrap my head around the entire silk screening process. That's been quite a expensive can of worms that I've opened up there.
How so?
Well, basically, I wanted to have an acid t-shirt to wear when I spoke at Nauticon. All the local screen printers wanted a 10 to 15 day, you know, lead time, and I didn't necessarily want to print off a gross or half a gross even of shirts. I just wanted one for myself. So I went down to the art store and picked up an $80 screen printing kit, thinking that all I would need, you know, would be contained inside this ultimate screen printing kit.
No, don't you need like a really expensive printer as well?
No, not at all.
Oh, really?
For the traditional screen printing process, it's somewhat similar in nature to photography and, you know, developing photographs. You apply like a negative emulsion to a silk screen, and then you expose it for a set amount of time, depending on what your conditions are and the size of the screen. And that's called burning in the image into the screen. And then you wash it out, and then what's left is different areas that will print through the screen that will allow ink to pass through.
Sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So it's the old school getaway of making your own t-shirts without going through, you know, something like Cafe Press, which I couldn't use anyways for my particular needs. I wanted a black or a dark gray shirt, and they don't offer anything right now, as far as I know, in the dark colors.
They offer the Radman Bunny, though.
Oh, yes, they do. If you want a Radman Bunny, then you can go to Cafe Press.
Yeah.
If you want
So how's it gotten expensive?
You know, I picked up this, it's called the Ultimate Screen Printing Kit by Speedball.
A nice company name.
Yeah. And, you know, you think, well, if I'm getting, you know, they offer maybe, I think, three or four kits. And you'd think, well, if I'm getting the Ultimate, surely it has everything I need. But no, not at all. I had to go pick up, you know, white ink and the emulsion remover and several other different products. And had to get foam and different pieces of glass. All sorts of things, all these other sort of supplies that you're not going to have laying around the house. So I had to make different trips to hardware stores and fabric stores and art stores as well, multiple trips to different art stores before I had everything. And so going forward, I think, you know, you could probably save a lot of money if time's not an issue and pick up most of this stuff online. But I'm probably in the neighborhood of, I don't know, $250, maybe $300 for six shirts.
Wow.
But the screens are reusable. So if I ever want to do this again, I have enough ink probably to, you know, make several dozen shirts.
Should do that. I'd buy one.
Yeah, wouldn't really be something I would sell. Just send them out to friends.
Right on.
You know, the other cool thing is that I can print these on whenever I want and whenever I feel like going through the whole cleanup process. If people have any questions or comments regarding our show, we can always be reached at radio@acid.org by email. And then, of course, if they want to check out the show, archives are stored at www.acid.org/radio.
Awesome. Also, I think we should thank Maestro for the IDs and drops that he's made for us.
Oh, yeah. Much love and respect to Maestro. He's done some really killer show IDs for us here.
I wonder how he got the radio guy to do the voice for us. It costs thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah. But I think that's it, dude.
Yeah. What's upcoming? You got anything upcoming? Any teasers or anything?
Okay. Teasers for the next show?
Yeah.
Well, we'll definitely be discussing how the speech went at Nauticon. And undoubtedly, there's a lot of things that I plan on having some folks from Metal Votes on the show, actually, for episode 3. So, you know, everybody who's been talking about the winter demo release and whether they hate it or love it, we're going to have some people from that group on the show.
Okay.
Other than that, we'll just kind of fly by the seat of our pants and see what news presents itself, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
All right, everybody. Well, thanks for listening, and to close out, we're going to play this song here from Winter Demo.
Fake als Coda ist voll dekadent, säuft Bier aus der Dose für 25 Cent. Bierkeule hat der Arsch sich mal genannt, lang habe ich in der Szene rumgerannt, ja. Und sonntags spitz wie 1000 Mann, macht geil mit der Schwester, dann und wann. Zum Saufen findet er immer einen Grund, ganz und sonst ist der Junge nicht beim Bund. Ragnarok, Pixel, ständig kranke Sachen, egal, er lässt es richtig krachen. Er malt uns Fotos am Kreuz,
warum?
Na, zur Freude aller Leute.
Der Draco ist unsere Hamburg-Zecke, er kennt auf dem Kiez jedes Loch und jede Ecke. Kommt er mit seinem Porno-Balken, könnt ihr schnell die Babes festhalten. Und Konflikt wohnt tief im Osten, kann auf Partys keine Würstchen mit uns rösten. Leute, spendet ihm ein Stück unter der Dusche.
The Arts. The Arts.